Welcome to Changing the Course, Building an Anti-Racist Education. My name is Nicholas Jones, Manager of Student Support and Culture here at Noble Schools. In this episode, we talked to Lindsay Cowles and Tariana Pinkston about their work supporting teachers this school year. Let's jump in. All right, today we're here with Tariana and with Lindsay on episode 6 of Changing the Course. Before we get into our conversation today, we'd love for you all to give my audience a quick introduction to yourself. Share as much as you want or as less as you want.
Hi, I'm Lindsay Cowles, Director of Academics for the Noble Support Team. I've been with Noble, this is my 8th year with Noble, and used to be a teacher at the OC, and now in this role. I'm really excited to be here.
Thanks for joining us.
My name is Tariana Pinkston. I don't know, we're changing my title. Instructional leadership coach or manager of instructional development.
Leadership.
Okay. So one of those. This is my 8th year at Noble. And I'm also currently an interim assistant principal at DRW. And I've worked at Rauner and Johnson.
So I got the original campus with Noble Street, got Johnson and Rauner, and currently you all serve as who in your roles?
Instructional leaders.
Teachers.
And teachers.
So instructional leaders and teachers. Awesome. And so this year, we've been talking a lot on all these episodes about the journey that we've been on. And changing the course through our policy and practice changing, talked a lot about an anti-racist commitment, a lot of references to our Noble Community Pact, and through the lens of different stakeholders this school year. This episode, we want to focus a lot of our time and conversation around the experience of our teachers, the experience of you all as the instructional leaders of our organization, and talk about what this change has looked like from that lens. So I invite you into this space to be as transparent as you feel comfortable being, but really want to give our audience an inside look into like how we started our year, spaces in which we may have had to pivot due to some things expected and some things unexpected. And ultimately, we'd love to end with us talking about how we decided to pivot and what are we doing to prepare ourselves for school year 23, keeping our teachers in the forefront of our mind and how their experiences impact and shape the experience of our students. So if we could just start with summer 2021, hopes, dreams, aspirations coming into SY22, considering all the changes and policies that we worked very hard getting to, but then implementation was right on the horizon. So can we just talk a little bit about what that preparation looked like as we came into our current school year?
Well, the spring of 21, I think, is when we ramped up a lot of the work in planning, given the policy shifts that we were preparing for, and it was a lot of work. We put our regular job sort of to the side. We stopped providing instructional leadership coaching and tried to really plan as best we could for what we knew was coming. And I think what we were all really excited about, these changes were what, you know, so many of us had worked for and wanted to be true for our students and for our teachers. And we were excited. I was excited. I was just knew that it was going to be hard, knew that we were going to have a lot of challenges, but we're really excited. I think one of the things in particular that I'm thinking about too is the Noble Community Pact. And that is sort of focused on culture, but as instructional leaders, we knew how important that work was to realize our academic vision. We know that our students, if they are in a punitive environment, they are not learning to their potential. That's not how the brain works. And so I know I was very excited about what that meant and could mean and still can mean. For our ability to realize our instructional and academic vision. So we came in excited, very excited.
I think that we were really excited about seeing kids in person. And that seemed to be the center of the joy. Summer happened, COVID numbers were going down. So we're like, yes, we're back.
Back to normal school.
Back to normal schooling. Right.
So we thought.
Yeah, so we thought. And I think also, you know, we had done a lot of work in that past year to really try to better understand anti-racism and these changes. People were excited about them. And we knew it was going to be rough. We were like, this is going to be hard. But I don't know if we collectively as an organization were having enough of those conversations. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it got much harder.
Mm-hmm. So you think about that time period in preparation, we knew what was coming. What were the anticipated barriers that you kind of saw ahead to? And if any, how do we prepare for those? Hmm.
We have, as an organization, talked about culture and instruction as separate forever and ever. And so I think one of the biggest potential barriers that we mm-hmm. were predicting was like the integration of those two things, right? And how do we, if I'm a teacher and I haven't had to also think about culture in the ways that we were asking them to think about, what does that look like, right? How do I do that? And so I think preparation for us was around professional development, how we get to instructional leaders and culture teams and teachers, right, like in the same spaces. Mm-hmm. So that even in their like beginning of year planning documents, yep. right, that like culture team is also looking at what teachers are providing just so that we're more integrated. So that's how I think we focus a lot mm-hmm. of energy there in preparation. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that we were thinking a lot about like the cultural side of things for teachers mm-hmm. That at Noble had, you know, I think we use this language now. It came through the year. It wasn't what we were thinking about at the time, but we were thinking about teachers having a lot of structure in their classrooms and then having to think about the additional supports that they would need to provide. In like an integrated culture and instruction context. And what I think I know now is that we weren't thinking about enough about what the structure had to look like and what structures meant in an anti-racist organization and what structures meant for students returning to school after a year of remote learning. I don't think that I fully appreciated how much we had to sort of relearn what that would be. And I don't think that I've had a full understanding of what all of our students had experienced in a yes. year of remote learning and what all of us had experienced, what our teachers had experienced. I think I have a better understanding now, but I don't think that we didn't. We just couldn't. I don't think we could have. It's something that we've never experienced, yes. you know? I think we were thinking about how to do that, and I don't think we fully appreciated the full mm-hmm. picture of what needed to be true.
So coming into the summer, it was the idea that it was important for us to know that culture and instruction did the blend. And say mm-hmm. we worked together at this point, mm-hmm. as we had in the past, but more intentional this year and more focused on the experience of teachers and students inside the classroom space. How is that approach different than the approach that we may have had in school year 19-20 in comparison mm-hmm. to this year?
Mm-hmm. I think under, prior to in school year 19-20 and before, we had a system of demerits and very clear structures and directives about like when a student would need to be removed from the classroom space in order to protect learning. I think it was efficient, right? We were trying to, I think the intention behind it was to ensure that teachers could teach in their classroom space and students could get what they need. But that meant that a student would sometimes be removed, right, or more often removed from the classroom and therefore removed from learning. And we want to stop that, right? Mm-hmm. We want to keep students in our classrooms and we want to make sure that they have relationships with their teachers so that they can continue on the learning, even when they're experiencing a growth moment or something around those lines. So I think what happened before was very concrete and clear and efficient, but it wasn't necessarily the best structure for learning. And so we wanted to shift that so that students were staying in the classroom and teachers had the skills and the structures within the classroom, you know, to serve the students through all of their needs, but stay in the classroom and keep learning.
So with that shift, how do we provide the training or the skill set that needed to shift away from depending on demerits to being more focused on relationships? Or was that a place of, like, we still need to figure this out thing, right? I don't want to lead people into thinking like we walked in, we knew everything that was going to happen and every answer for that. And so we identified that the relationship building piece would be an important component, as it always is, of classroom spaces.
Yeah, so, I don't think, maybe two things. I think we actually need to start with this, maybe not start with, but need to emphasize just as much as the relationships and the support, the structure. Mm-hmm. What are the structures that we need in our classrooms and in our schools that allow for clarity, that allow for our students to have a sense of like what is what, give teachers clear moves or directions so that they don't have to think about it, because ultimately we want them thinking about the learning and what's the right question to ask and who's the student that needs your attention more than like, what do I do if? Mm-hmm. So I think we need to think still about structures, but what are the structures that continue to allow us to realize our commitment to anti-racism and to culturally responsive and sustaining teaching? Those things aren't structureless, mm-hmm. But we need to get those structures right to make sure that they are the right ones to allow us to realize our goals. But I don't think that was clear when we came back. I don't think it was clear that we still needed structure or we weren't sure what the structure was. So then we didn't have it. We didn't know what to do. I also think that I don't know yet what all teachers need in terms of support for students, because I think what I did not fully understand was just all of what our students had experienced.
Yes.
I think no matter, I mean, I came back to in-person schooling feeling like a lack of trust and like hurt and like not stable. We had just experienced something that no one had ever experienced and didn't always feel super supported in that experience, right? And that we were being kept safe. Our students didn't come to school, right? Like, so not only were they experiencing that just like the rest of us, they also, as an adolescent, had the thing that was in some cases, you know, just what all of our students in the country experience every day, right? The stability of school wasn't there. And I think that, conscious or not, many of our students probably lost trust. Like, my teacher was there, but on a screen, right? And that was right. That we were keeping people safe, but the way that our students experienced that, I think, is really hard for an adolescent to process. And I think now our teachers are carrying that, because now our students are coming back to school. You know, things are still not as stable as they once were. They have all of these experiences that I'm sure are hard to understand, because I find them hard to understand. And our teachers are the ones there with them and having to work with them and figure out all of what they've experienced and then what has to happen next. What do our students need? So I hope that one of the things that we do next year is learn from our teachers, mm-hmm. right? Like, let them tell us what exactly is happening in the classroom and what it means to be anti-racist, culturally responsive, and sustaining for students who have experienced a pandemic. So that's, you know, one of the things that I hope that we continue to do is to learn from the teachers, from our teachers who have shouldered it. I've carried it.
I think that like demerits, this idea about automaticity, mm-hmm. like demerits made things automatic for us, right? Like, so as a teacher, this cultural breach happened and I gave a demerit and that sort of like addressed it and we moved on, or they were removed. Like, there are different iterations of that. And so I didn't have to think about culture, mm-hmm. right, in my classroom. And then in the Noble Community Pact, was asking teachers to think about culture very intentionally, to mm-hmm. have a plan for it in ways that a lot of our teachers hadn't had to. And so what happened in a lot of spaces is that then our teachers focused their energy on trying to build relationships or like build culture, and also learned that they forgot how to teach. Right, like we've been at home. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so it was the constant battle of those two things, right? How do I get back into teaching and packing my lunch again and doing, you know, grades in the way that I was doing it, as well as, you know, be an ally, be a partner, be a supporter for students who came back with levels of trauma that we didn't expect. And I, teacher, am also different now. Mm-hmm. And this experience was traumatic for me. Yes. And so now I got to commute again, and now I'm tired. And I think teaching is a profession, particularly when you're dealing with students that we serve, where we're kind of expected to be martyrs, right? And so teaching is the core of all the things that we do. And during the pandemic, we stopped doing that, mm-hmm. right? Like as teachers, right? Yeah. Like we like got to be with our families more. We got to have a different hustle. So when we came back into the building, our students were more traumatized in some spaces, and so were we. Mm-hmm. And then our teachers also weren't able to then carry things in the same way as they did before. And so it just made for a really tough experience. Mm-hmm. And so when I think about how you then plan for that, I don't know all the ways, mm-hmm. right? But I do know that we have to continue to be innovative around what it means to be well, mm-hmm. what it means to have a family and teach kids, what it means to like model taking care of ourselves, right? Like we have to continue to talk about the fact that the entire world has changed in the last 2 years. And I think that we don't say that enough. Like we don't have a roadmap because everything is different.
You're like living in history right now.
Exactly. Yeah. And sometimes, and that's hard when people expect us to know as adults the things to do. But the reality is I actually think teachers have appreciated the more that we name that for them, that like, yo, it's a pandemic. Yeah. And it could, right now, schools are closing because of the upticks, right, that are back. And so it's the continual pandemic. It's the continual undoing of the things that we know that we're not talking about enough.
Yeah.
So let's talk about it then, right? And so you just mentioned that at this time, current time, we're seeing COVID cases kind of pick back up in school spaces. How has that impacted the teacher experience and then ultimately impacted the student experience when we talk about the rigor in classrooms, the consistency and the structure that's needed to provide that stability?
It's horrible. It's horrible. Yeah.
And when you say horrible, right, like think of a teacher that you're coaching, currently working with right now, or have talked to this school year. What have those experiences felt like? Because I imagine that conversations this year may have sounded a lot different than what they sounded a couple of years ago, pre-pandemic. Maybe going from an instructional coach to a little bit of slash life coaching keep going, right? And so how have teachers responded to like that shift, and how have you responded to the shift in need that teachers had this year?
We have been like more personal coach than instructional coach. I think that a lot of teachers are questioning if this is the right place for them, if this is the right job, or if this job is a job that's sustainable, and especially one that allows you to be well. I think we're seeing that across the country, and we are not immune by any means. And so I think I personally have had a lot of questions about, or a lot of conversations about like, is this right? And how can I continue to, live out my goals and this mission, which I'm committed to, but in a different way, because this is, it's really hard. Like Tarianna said, we don't have a consistency. We don't, because of the pandemic. Mm-hmm. There was a time where it started to feel a little better, and then like we get hit in the face again with like uptick in cases. And so you can't build that momentum that is so essential to a classroom, right? We ramp up and we hit our stride during the school year. And that's when things are clicking, and that's when kids are getting the most rigorous learning. At any time we got momentum, we got hit in the face again.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, kids aren't learning to the degree that we would hope, or that, you know, they have in the past. We're not having conversations about, you know, this one lesson, I can't just get it right. It's more like, how do we show up every day?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And beyond the pandemic, just the sort of disintegration of so much of our society in terms of violence and the losing of students. Mm-hmm. Our teachers, those are our students. Mm-hmm. That's a lot to ask people to carry.
Yeah.
I think that I would be remiss to not say that everything has been unstable, mm-hmm. right? And so you go from like, your school's open today, next day it's not.
Yeah.
You go from, you got one, everybody's here today, 2 days later, you got 12 people out, right? Mm-hmm. And so the lack of, it's meant for our instructional leaders that like they're subbing classrooms, mm-hmm. or like people are pulled in so many different directions. And so our sense of predictability,
mm-hmm.
Which we probably needed more now than ever, like coming back,
yeah.
it's just not there. Mm-hmm. And so I think that has been hard in ways that is, you know, hard for teachers, right? Like you're mm-hmm. even if you do make some traction, then yeah. it's like, oh, now we're, you know, these things have changed. So yeah. I don't know what you do with that, but I think it's important to note to like, as people are trying to figure out how to be well, and we want them to be, it's also like, how do we navigate that with how often people are coming to work or not coming yeah. to work? How do you provide, you know, sustainability? How do you provide predictability? And especially in an environment where, as a country, we're not talking about schooling differently.
Absolutely.
Right? Like, we're still talking about this schedule, you know? And so that's a reality where it makes teachers question whether or not the profession is sustainable because we're not thinking of things differently.
Yep.
It's like, we're going to come back and we're going to try to do it better in the same way.
But there was a space, though, right, when reimagining right. was...
Yeah,
what's the word? And it's like, let's reimagine.
It's on one of my slide decks.
You know, yeah, like yeah. that was the yeah. thing, right? And so,
yeah.
and then we did that reimagining.
Yeah.
And then on our journey, or we want to call our roller coaster, we get hit with a wall a little bit or a break
yeah.
in our reimagining mm-hmm. and what reimagining looks like in implementation and experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you have like a moment when you was like, yo, sure, hard stop. We need to figure out how to pivot and where to go next to best support our teachers.
This year?
This year.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if reimagining was the issue, though, right? Like, I think that we didn't understand as an organization change management, right? And so we were asking both for a lot of changes at once, and in an environment that continued to be unpredictable. And so without that understanding as a part of the reimagination, I think that it set us up to feel like everything was chaotic. And it may not have been that it's not necessarily wrong, right? But like, we had made all these changes, and because of the manifestations of like trauma that were true, so like, an example is a lot of our campuses, the uptick in violence, student-to-student violence, students are more triggered. The level of fighting and altercations is much higher than it was pre-pandemic. And so there was also this moment where it was like, is this because of the reimagination that we had? Is it because of the Noble Community Pact? And that's what we ascribed it to.
Mm-hmm.
Because we also hadn't been, we didn't understand about the levels of trauma,
yeah.
right? And the level
yeah.
of change that had happened. So I think as an organization, we had a moment where we're like, we got to pivot because these changes aren't working. And sometimes that was absent of the conversation around what it meant for people to come back to work, for kids
yeah.
to come back to work. And I mean, this is going to be what it is. But, you know, what I think from a teacher's space, once we hit the January sort of run where we had the half-day schools, like for COVID, and it felt a lot more manageable for teachers, right?
Like that was definitely a different time.
It was a different time
to walk into a space, and you felt yeah. a little bit of that. You
felt a little bit more. You
got energy,
a little more joy.
The joy, yeah, definitely.
And it was because we needed to make sure that we kept, you know, our students and families safe. So it was the right call. And I think in some places for our teachers, it was very hard to then go back to the regular sort of way of things, mm-hmm. because we had found a little bit of like joy in the storm. Mm-hmm. If that.
No, that made perfect. Yeah, mm-hmm. Understood.
Yeah, I think, and coming to the end of that was when we also had a moment of like, okay, mm-hmm. now what are we going to do? You know, and one of the concrete shifts we made was to throw out our plans for quarter three professional development. You know, we normally offer a variety of sessions for teachers to choose from, and like you can sort of pick your pathway about what session you want to go to. And I think, you know, thinking about change management, we were like, wait, we need to get some clarity about what needs to be true in order for us to realize the reimagining. And so we created a session where we went to every campus and delivered basically the same session to talk about high structure and high support. And I think that will continue to be some of the work that we do to try to help each teacher and each campus like create the predictability. Mm-hmm. Like I think one of the things we're going to have to reimagine is how do you create predictability out of instability? Mm-hmm. You know, what does that mean? How do we just plan for what now is sort of predictable? Yeah. Is, you know, it's
what
different.
What do we learn now that we can plan for next year so it don't catch us all off guard again, essentially, right? And so I think that one of the things I think you highlight is like a clear pivot. And so after Christmas break, mm-hmm. we came back in January. Mm-hmm. We had an abbreviated schedule that provided some more space for wellness, mm-hmm. balance, mm-hmm. and then February came and we went back into a normal schedule, but you all identified that, hey, during that time, we kind of got a better picture of what it is that mm-hmm. campus teams need, what teachers need. And the pivot was, let's throw out our plans for our quarter three development mm-hmm. that we've been running and been successful mm-hmm. in, mm-hmm. that we got templates for already, and let's mm-hmm. dig in and create something that can be beneficial to folks. Can you talk to the audience a little bit about what those sessions look like and how did they support the path forward this year?
It was all based around high structure, high support. So trying to create a clear definition of what is a restorative classroom. And I think one of the areas where we saw people didn't have clarity is they didn't know what that was. Okay. In a concrete way, right? We could all define it, but what does that actually mean and look like? And so we used some of the research to talk about a restorative classroom has both high structure and high support, and tried to give teachers some concrete strategies. In some ways, not strategies that they didn't already know. Like, that's one thing that we should also name is that our teachers did amazing things this mm-hmm. year, and our kids did amazing things this year. So we want to keep all Absolutely. Of that. But it was just to name it, right? To say, this is the thing to do. And many of you are, like, especially for our more experienced staff, you already know. And you're doing it, but in a lot of places, people were unsure, like, is this the thing? Mm-hmm. Am I, you know, this doesn't feel like it has in the past, so I don't feel successful.
Yeah.
And so just being able to say, yes, you are right, was really important for us. And we want to continue to name those places where, and those strategies and those teacher moves that so many of our teachers have. Mm-hmm. That we continue to share and to highlight so that we continue to learn from those teacher moves. So I think we'll continue to do that and continue to try to find concrete ways for teachers to serve their students and to get that, be able to ramp up, be able to get to those rigorous moments and that joy that makes teaching worth it. Try to figure out how to make that happen even in a world that is still pandemic schooling. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think that's when we talk about wellness, there's like a balance component. And there's also the fact that people want to be good at what they do.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You don't go into teaching to get your paycheck. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the old adage that remains true. You get it. You do it for those moments. And we just want to be able to give teachers the ability to have those moments again. So I hope that that's what we're able to do next year. I think we're really excited about some of this stuff. In addition to the Noble Community Pact, we've tried to reimagine our academic programming. And while maybe we haven't been able to truly rethink what schooling looks like. I think that we're really excited about, you know, last year we put culturally responsive and sustaining teaching at the center of the Noble Classroom, which is our vision of excellent instruction at Noble.
Before you keep going, when you drop those academic terms, you gotta provide this. Culturally responsive teaching. Being able to, you know, explain to our audience, give them a quick little summary like what that is and like why that's an important component of anti-racist education.
So during the pandemic, I did a session asynchronously on the computer.
On Zoom.
that really talked about, you know, the need for us to have instruction that is relevant and engaging for our students, right? Mm-hmm. That takes a strength-based approach and that looks at what assets they're bringing in, what they have already, and connects material through that. And there's a lot of brain science and research behind it, but just the conditions that need to be true for kids to accelerate their learning. Mm-hmm. And also that we're learning in a way that honors their cultures and heritages and tries to sustain them along the way and is not trying to push that outside of the classroom experience, mm-hmm. right? And that's how we define culturally responsive and sustaining mm-hmm. teaching.
Thank you.
So yeah, we're excited. We're developing, we'll do some work with teachers over starting next week to provide curriculum materials, instructional materials, assessment materials, and specifically thinking about culturally responsive and sustaining teaching, what it looks like in each content area. So we're really excited to get that work going, to develop those resources and those materials for teachers and provide them. We're also rethinking what professional development looks like mm-hmm. next year from the network to make sure that it's content-based.
I was going to ask you that because, I mean, right now we got people on all ends of the spectrum right now around like where they are in the journey that we're on individually mm-hmm. as humans, where mm-hmm. we are in our journey on our changes and our practice and what success feels like and looks like. And so this shift in professional development, what is that going to look like for our teachers?
Well, some of it is to be more content-based.
Okay.
So that teachers aren't learning sort of in the abstract, like here's how to provide a rigorous assignment for students. They're actually looking at curriculum that they would actually be delivering. So they're getting more concrete practice to say, okay, this is how I would actually deliver the lesson in order to do X, Y, Z. And we think that's sort of the next step for our teachers to be able to provide that level of clarity. So that's one aspect of it. I think we also, you know, Tarianna mentioned the combination of culture and instruction. You know, we're going into next year thinking about it as a year of continued learning. Mm-hmm. We learned a lot about the context that we're living in this year. And so next year we hope to learn more about, well, what needs to be true then? And what do we have to understand? We're talking about getting certified in running peace circles so that we can then bring sessions to our teachers to teach them how to do that and what that looks like as a teacher, because mm-hmm. that might be different than a culture team member. So lots of learning. Part of our commitment to anti-racism included a group, the Instructional Core Design Group, which Tarianna co-led. So there's beliefs and shifts there that we hope to start to put into place next year, including a shift to Common Core standards and next generation science standards. Those standards are meant to be more holistic than what we've looked at before. So we're excited about that. And then just continuing our focus on culturally responsive and sustaining teaching.
And I think so with a lot of more clarity, I think pre-pandemic, there were lots of things we were doing that kind of said, here's what this means. Like mm-hmm. we were trying to define things for folks. But really now it's about teachers want to know, like, all right, tell me how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that our work, especially as our, you know, brain capacity, right? Like mm-hmm. automaticity has shifted a little bit. There, people are like, okay, we're with you.
We good. Yes. How do I do it?
How do I do? Yeah. Right?
Like I heard you. I believe
yep.
it.
Yeah.
How do I do that in my space?
And that has been the teacher experience, right? I think for a lot of folks who are like, okay, I'm on board. Yeah. I've determined that I'm on board, mm-hmm. but then tell me how to do it. And I think pre-pandemic, we spent a lot of time trying to make sure people were on board mm-hmm. with the vision of anti-racism, you mm-hmm. know, and culturally responsive sustainable teaching and what should be true for our kids. And now we're here into the how. So I think the instructional core design proposal has been really helpful to give clarity for like vision, for strategy, for what's coming next. Mm-hmm. What I'm really excited about, and I'm biased because, you know, this mm-hmm. is a big part of my work, but we have like a framework for culturally responsive and sustaining teaching at Noble, which we've never had before. Mm-hmm. And we'll continue to sort of build that out, but it will continue to give just clarity and strategies and what this means. And I think that plus the shift into content-based teaching and learning is gonna be really excellent mm-hmm. on the journey.
The work that you do was super important, right? We talked about it in depth in our conversation today. Why is the work that you all do with our teachers important to our anti-racist commitment?
Mm-hmm. I think the answer to that is twofold, maybe. One is one of the things that we like to think about a lot is ensuring that we support our students or our teachers of color, our teacher and staff of color, especially actually our Black teachers, to combat the anti-Blackness that we've seen throughout our nation and throughout our organization. So I think that's one thing, is that we support teachers, and specifically we want to think about how we're supporting our teachers of color. The other part of that is the instructional experience. And so the instructional core design team was born out of our commitment to anti-racism. It was informed by the voices of our students, our alumni, our parents, and our staff. And so that was what they were telling us is, you know, the shifts that we are making are coming from what they're telling us they need. So I think part of our commitment to anti-racism was an acknowledgement that we were not serving all of our students in the best way possible. We were not serving all of our teachers, specifically our Black teachers and teachers of color, in the best ways possible, and we were losing them. And so all of the work, all of these shifts are meant to address those places where we were not fulfilling our mission, where we were not serving specifically our Black students. And so we hope that through more holistic standards and therefore a broader definition of learning, and through a commitment to culturally responsive and sustaining teaching, we're recognizing the identities and the assets of all of our students. And so the resources that we provide, we hope will allow all of our teachers to thrive and to serve all of our students.
I would think about it in two ways. And I'll try to like manage my emotions around this a little bit, because I think it's really important. First off, our teachers have the most important job, mm-hmm. full stop. They are the closest to the work. They are the closest to our babies. And if we do not support them and equip them, the work doesn't happen. Like that's it. Mm-hmm. And they are entrusted with people's children, right? And so we have got to do all that we can to make sure that they are equipped to provide the experiences that are, you know, in some cases life-changing, you know, mm-hmm. like that's what we committed to. I think that the anti-racist commitment for me means that we believe as an organization that our kids should come to us and have affirming schooling experiences. They shouldn't have to leave who they are behind, that so many of our students come from underserved, you know, have underserved experiences, and that you come to us, we're going to make sure that you're well, we're going to make sure that you learn, we're going to make sure that you have the agency to make decisions about your life, your future, right, and what's next. And we're going to give you all of that. Like, that's what we told them. And the anti-racist commitment acknowledges that we haven't done that, right? And so when I think about our work, it is that is how all this is connected, right? That we have to support teachers and that we understand that we are dealing with people's children. Mm-hmm. And often children who have been marginalized, who have been underserved, who need to come to a space that feels safe, mm-hmm. That doesn't ask them to be anything different in a world that always asks them to be something different. And so the through line for us and our work is through our teachers. Mm-hmm. That is the work. And so I feel really committed to making sure that we equip them because I am a mother, right? A mother to Black boys. And I need y'all to know what to do with them because they both off the chain a little bit. One of them's only two, one of them's 15, right? But I need to, for them to have schooling experiences where I could send them to school and trust that they will be able to be well, that they will be able to have the agency that we have promised our families.
We've been having a fantastic conversation today. Definitely appreciate your candor and appreciate how transparent you've been with our audience. We want to transition into our portion of our podcast in which we kind of get down to practice. Mm-hmm. I think the highlight of this experience for me as the host has been able to hear our experts provide expert strategies to our audience in order for them to go back into their school spaces to either implement mm-hmm. or to be able to go and research more to learn more about the strategy in hopes to implement to support their teachers in that space. And so in getting down to practice, we would just ask that you provide a strategy to our audience that they can take back to their school space in the hopes to continue to build the work towards anti-racist mm-hmm. classroom space for our students.
Well, one of the things I've been talking about a lot this year, and I mentioned it earlier about the importance of structure, and that I think coming back to in-person schooling, some of us were hesitant to want to put too much structure into place, but actually structure is what makes it all possible because it creates that sense of predictability, and it also allows for students to develop a sense of belonging. They know what's coming, and they feel a part of that structure. So in one of our sessions, we talked a lot about the importance of routines and rituals. So making sure that you have routines in your classroom so that students know what they can expect, and therefore they don't have to think about, you know, where I'm going to sit or what the teacher is going to say next, but I can actually think about the learning or how I'm interacting with my peers. So the importance of routines is really important for that. And then within those routines, having rituals. That give a sense of community and like, this is what we do. Mm-hmm. We have this ritual every time X or this is my part in this ritual. And that is what gives kids that sense of community and not just I'm one student here sitting in this classroom, but I am a part of this community. I belong here. And with that mindset, I am able to learn to my greatest potential.
And before we transition to turn on, could you give us like an example of what a ritual inside that classroom space will look like?
Sure. So it might be when someone does something like poses a really innovative question, we have something that we do to honor and affirm that really exciting question. In the past, we've done like, you know, these spirit finger things. Yeah. And it seems silly. And sometimes we're like, that's super lame. Don't do mm-hmm. that. But mm-hmm. it actually means something for kids. You know, yeah. it gives them that. When they see another kid, we actually see alums do it all the time. Mm-hmm. When they see someone else do it, there's like a recognition mm-hmm. of, I know what that means.
Yeah.
Or just gratitude, right? Like one of our distinguished teachers has Gratitude Thursdays. And so we spend time giving gratitude to one another in the classroom space. And so every Thursday as a student, I can expect that I'm gonna get to do that and I might actually get some gratitude and we have space to honor one another. So anything that's more like social emotional or learning, just a routine that has meaning gives kids that sense of belonging.
Great question. I would say that you get the structures, you get the routines, which are critical to having a successful anti-racist classroom. And as a teacher, as an educator, you have to continue to be willing to like question the decisions that we're making and make sure that we're thinking about purpose over power. Mm-hmm. Because we, especially I think if you've been teaching for a little while, there are certain things we've just always done. And we expect kids to do that. And that's what we make true in our classroom without really seeing our kids and being clear about why we're asking them to do certain things. And sometimes it's like, here's just the rationale for that. And sometimes it's like, maybe I should rethink it. My example that I will give of a conversation I have, and this one is, you know, a little touchy, but it's okay. I had a teacher that I was kind of coaching through and having a conversation with, and he was very frustrated about the lack of homework completion that was being true in his class, and sort of this move to, like, you know, homework, supposed to do his homework every day, and sometimes it's not graded, and all these things. And just the disinvestment that he felt. And I'm like, I understand that. That makes sense to me. And earlier, you also talked to me about how you no longer do work at home, right? Like, and how the pandemic has shifted you. And so why is it then that we don't understand the student experience, right? Why is it that we don't understand that my son comes home to me and says, why I gotta do this? I've been in school for 8 hours. You know, we couldn't figure it out there. You know, we do it here. You know, and I try to give him my, you know, my parent
answer.
You gotta
answer. Give the
you gotta do answer, it because you gotta earn your stripes. Yeah, you know, and it doesn't mean that the answer is don't do homework, but right. But how do we continue to investigate and think about power dynamics and power structures as we're building out a space of community for our kids?
Tariana, Lindsay, thank you for joining Changing the Course today. But before we let you go, we have all of our guests read our founding quote by Bettina Love. So, Tariana, if you can look right into that camera right there, please share that quote with our community.
To love all children, we must struggle together to create the schools we are taught to believe are impossible.
Schools built on justice, love, joy, and anti-racism.
Thanks for joining Changing the Course.
Changing the Course will be taking a hiatus during our summer months. Thank you for connecting and engaging with us during this season. We look forward to reconnecting with you all in the fall. Be well.
Changing the Course is a video podcast series produced by Noble Schools, a leading charter school network in Chicago, Illinois. If you're interested in seeing the video for this episode or learning more about Noble, you can visit us at nobleschools.org. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, and Twitter. Changing the Course is hosted by Nicholas Jones, Manager of Student Support and Culture at Noble Schools. This episode was produced by Nicholas Jones and Ash Kenyon, and it was edited by Ash Kenyon. The music you heard throughout this episode was created by Angel Mancia, one of our students at Mission College Prep. It was mixed and edited by David Reddick, a music teacher at Mission. If you have any questions you would like us to answer during this series, please send us an email at communications@nobleschools.org with the subject line, Question for Changing the Course. Thank you for listening, and see you next time.